What do you think about all of these major heroes or pop cultural icons being blue and red, like Spider-Man and Optimus Prime?
Right.
What do you think
Well,
about that? That was.
yeah.
Is that like
No,
some
that's.
kind of middle pillar
Well,
symbolism?
yeah. Think about the leader of the Decepticons is Megatron, which is obviously a play on Metatron. This is something I've been obsessed with and included in my Think Book chapter because it's just so fucking far out that he's
Right.
all
That's
about.
what made me think of that, yeah.
Hey, guys, let's take a quick break because our reception is kind of shitty right now.
Okay, but I gotta warn you guys that I'm probably gonna have to leave at 1.
Okay.
Okay, what's your one for us? Like my noon, I guess? Are you an
That's like
hour?
30 minutes. Like I'm 12:27 here right now. But I do have
Okay.
to pee, so
I'm just going to hang up and then we'll meet back here in just a couple of minutes.
Okay, bye.
All right.
I'm sorry, I tried to break in, but we were kind of on a good thread there. But yeah, I'll have to go in like 15 minutes here. I apologize.
Oh, okay, whatever. I like what you were saying about Spider-Man with the red and the blue, and I was tripping out like all of a sudden on like just like the whole web deal, and like how it's interesting if you look at the internet as the web, right? It's like
right.
We're making all connections as the web, and relating that to the red and the blue of Spider-Man was just like, and then equating that with the two pillars was just like a really interesting moment. And the fact that you have, you know, the red and the blue of like 3D glasses and what that means for the right and left sides of your brain having a reversal
right.
from your eyes, and how the sphero of the supernal triad switch for the seven lower sphero and what that means in terms of like right and left brain meets the eyes, like that was pretty trippy.
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, at least as far as the motion picture version of the Spider-Man history goes, the center of its universe is Oscorp, which again would resurrect the whole strength card and the force and the and if you look at how Spider-Man started off. I've talked about this on your show before, but the whole show starts off with them having to retract the preview due to the collapse of the Twin Towers. And then the newest movie that just came out has to do with this new addition to the New York skyline as the Oscorp building. So there's heavy Oz residents as well.
Right. And then if you look at that, there's the web between the towers. Like, that's
right.
Just an interesting meditation in and of itself. And the fact that it's a helicopter that gets caught in it. And then there's a whole thing about the helicopter that was there at the World Trade Center's. Have you seen that? Where there's like a little thing. Like, what? Why? Because there's supposed to be no flying, right? I mean, that was the whole thing with NORAD or whatever. I know it's true for helicopters, too, but
Stuff with the helicopters is weird. Like if you like what is highlighted by September Clues about all of the interference and the weird broadcasting interruptions that sound like they're talking about the helicopters, and then the flash of light when the helicopter goes behind the smoke cloud as highlighted by Kotze in the old school days. And so it's really kind of funky. Leads you to believe that the helicopter. I mean, because have you ever seen the footage from the helicopters? That just looks fake as shit. Like it doesn't even look real. because there were news helicopters up there, and then all of a sudden we get the footage from them, and they look like they've been drastically changed.
Yeah, there was a video, a long video, just looking at, just like everything else aside, let's just look at the actual news footage and do comparisons between each different news broadcast from the different angles and just like close-ups and all the stuff. And dude, like they really do show a good argument for like how fake the shit looks. And it's like, well,
I think that was September Clues. I'm pretty sure that the name of that.
Is that
video
cool?
Is
I don't remember what it,
yeah, it's just basically the archival footage of that day, and it's jacked up because you can really tell that if you go back and you can look at archive.org and type in 9/11, and you can go through it. They have it divided like this is CNN's, this is ABC's, this is CBS's, and you can sit there and commercials are included and everything. But they took that archival footage and really separated it and took a look at it and showed you where there's inconsistencies and so forth. But like Fox's has completely been remixed. Like Fox News, you can sit there and look at it and say, wait a minute, this was obviously done after the fact. Like,
yeah,
just the way that it's set up has been totally reworked. That in itself is BS. That in itself.
Yeah,
in
the first fucking place. Yeah, what the fuck? Like, yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, well, okay, this happened. Apparently, people saw this, but like, what the fuck, dude? Why are they having fake footage? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Very weird.
But okay, so if they have a Spider-Man movie and they have a helicopter that gets trapped between a web of the two towers, but they remove it because of sensitivity to the public that has been traumatized by this disaster.
Right. Well, this was just an advertisement. This didn't actually occur in the film, but yeah.
So, right. but it was there, and they took it out. They did not include that scene in the movie because of
The scene was never in the movie. The scene that which is a weird thing to do. Anyways, this whole scene was based off of for mere promotional value. That particular scene was never meant to be in the movie at all. They just took the preview of the trailer out of the theaters. Because I remember seeing it. I remember going to the theaters because it starts off with these people robbing the bank, and you're like, well, what is this? This looks kind of cool. And then when they're getting away in their helicopter, all of a sudden something grabs them, and they start moving backwards, and you're like, what is going on? And then they're in the middle of the Twin Towers with the web, and the helicopter's like malfunctioning in the middle of the web, and you're like, oh, it's Spider-Man, yes! But that was never meant to be on the silver screen. So why they would do that anyways is baffling.
Right. That was the other part to it, was that it was a heist. So like that was what the original Loose Change, before they changed Loose Change, showed, was like you had like this crazy like line of armored trucks going straight from the wreckage of Ground Zero to the New York branch of the Federal Reserve. And like, it was supposedly because this is a trade building and they had fucking tons of gold in the lower part of the building, which was retrieved. And they follow these trucks through the Lincoln Tunnel from it. It's real footage. Like, you're watching it. And so like, that was the idea, was that it was like, this money was like unaccounted for because there's supposed to be the separation, right? Between Federal Reserve, different from the federal government. There's nothing federal about the Federal Reserve and the World Trade. And so that, I don't know, I just like that was a really interesting aspect of it. And so I remember that from the Spider-Man thing, that it's like, oh, it's a robbery, and then here they show the fuck, like, I don't know, that was weird.
Right. It was portraying a high-tech heist, like you said, which was interesting because I never saw it as that, but that would make sense. And it, for me, Bill, it was the highlight of the helicopter. It was almost like a little nudge telling you better look closer at those helicopters.
Totally. Well, yeah.
The imagery for me is just sort of the Rose Cross imagery, right? With the cube of space unfolded and the rose that is hung in the middle square, right?
Mm.
Sure. Yeah, you could look at the helicopter in the place of Tiferet, which would be your Rose. You got Princess Diana hanging out in the middle of the web.
Hey, David, I got a question to ask you because I'm about to release a new video here soon dealing with actor Nick Stahl and his relationship to the color yellow. And, of course, you know, it has to do with the liver because yellow skin and blood is usually a highlight for liver problems, right? Of course, he plays John Connor in the Terminator series in number 3, but he's shot by Clara Danes, and he, like, you think that, oh, she just shot him with the gun, but she shoots him with the paintball gun, and he lifts up his hands, and they're yellow. And then he's in Sin City, where he plays the yellow bastard with Bruce Willis. And then he's in another movie called Dead Awake with Rose McGowan, where, and the word rose is what keyed me in on talking about this. So, of course, he has Jesus highlights, and then he has this yellow thing going on where he's coming back from life. And then the Sephiroth in the middle, Tephiroth, which is yellow, which is largely associated with the sun and largely associated with Jesus. But I also associate it kind of with the liver because it is yellow. And when I was telling Andras Jones this, Andras was like, no, it's associated with the heart. I was like, yeah, but if you think of the tree as the body, and then this one would usually be highlighted as the solar plexus, right? Tephiroth would be in the solar plexus, which is where the liver is.
Right. Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I mean, well, I had this whole thing with, so that's the Jupiter Center in the classic occult schools. There's a book by Daphne Moore called The Rabbi's Tarot that's based off of a manuscript from a Jesuit priest who became a follower of Jung in person. Like, he was one of his like main disciples. And there was this leaked fucking manuscript. And she basically goes into, in the section on the Wheel of Fortune, she goes into the Jupiter Center as the solar plexus and thus related to Tiferet and how this is like the seat of the instincts. And so when you watch like Donnie Darko, where does the fucking like abyss type thing that determines people's like chain of instincts, right? directly from the solar plexus. And so there was this really interesting whole chain that I went down around that. One thing I'd mention about your Nick Stahl character is that he's also in The Thin Red Line, which has been on my mind a lot lately because I keep reading about the Thin Green Line in Kabbalistic text from Ramak, where he's describing the thin green line that spreads around the globe that is, it's the origin of where the serpent around the Orphic egg came from. Right. And it's the line of the serpent from the garden that extends across the world as a spiral. And like, and so when it's like the thin red line, I was like, huh, that's fucking weird, because then you're obviously like looking at Japan or whatever, but it's also like a propaganda type view of things. But I was like, wow, it's kind of strange because the thin green line is ultimately propaganda in the first fucking place, even though it's real. Like, even though it's real on some level, it's still propaganda. And so anyways, I don't know, I was kind of, that's just like the tip of that iceberg, but it's interesting that I see that he's included with that. So and also, the same guy who did the Tree of Life did the Thin Red Line,
yeah, the film. Terrence Malick.
So it's like overly symbolic and whatnot.
Yeah, that was the because I was going over that, and then I was like, wow, this film seems to be relating to the Tree of Life in other ways too. I was watching a film where Nick, what's his name? I'm spacing right now, but the guy talking about the way that the roots are of the trees are like eating away at everything, that like basically he's describing that life feeds on life, and it's kind of like his
rationalization.
What they're doing out there. What's that?
The Ouroboros, or the snake eating its own tail, the like you mentioned, the thin green line, or the interplay of consciousness and unconsciousness always eating each other.
Yeah, so when you watch the film, like, it seems to be emphasizing that kind of perception of things. And so I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting. Like, Yeah.
All right, well, gentlemen, it has been an absolute a pleasure talking to you.
Hell yeah, Will Morgan. Good to have you.
Milk Will Morgan?
A few shots to Shaman.
Right.
I knew that on a level. Like, I had the thought even before I said it. I was like, is that you? But fuck it, I'll say it anyway, because
I'm just happy people. Like I said, man, you commented on my movies before, and I usually don't get a response to any blog post or anything, and unless I ask, I just keep I keep putting stuff out and I keep doing things, but it's not like I just thought I was being egotistical, thinking nobody looked at me or whatever. So, but I appreciate the fact that you've read that one, that you like that one, because I don't even get very many comments in the comment section. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't always comment, and I bet a lot of people don't always comment, and it doesn't mean that they didn't read it and enjoy it. They just, I'm like, okay, I don't know what to say to that. A lot of the time, I just, it's like I'll read Nathan Pereira's, blogs, and I'm just like, I don't even know what to say to that. And I'm like, it feels like he's reading my mind, or he's just so fucking in touch, and like, the way that he does it, I appreciate so much, and like, I mean, I hardly ever comment on any of it. It doesn't mean that I'm not looking at it. And so a few shots of Shaman is another one of those. I looked at quite a few of those and never commented. So, and I, like I said, I don't think I'm the only one. So remember that.
Yes, sir. I will. Hard to forget. I appreciate both you guys. And I love I'm a huge fan of Always Record and listen to all of them. Can't wait to hear what you guys keep talking about after I hang up. I hope this isn't the end of your conversation today.
Oh, we got tons. We got tons of shit, Will Morgan.
We're gonna go on for another 4 hours.
Oh yeah, we just scratched the surface.
But yeah, if anybody's interested in my work, it's a few shots to shaman.blogspot.com. Of course, I don't have all of my stuff hooked up. Like, I don't have my YouTube channel or my Vimeo account, but most everything's been put up.
How'd you get that name for the blog?
A few shots to Shaman. I'm glad you asked that. It really was just spontaneous. Because I didn't really jump into – I had a weird dream experience. I was listening to a lot of stuff about UFOs while I was doing some freelance artwork for some individuals. And I had listened to this whole podcast about the Montauk chair, which is this jump chair in Mars, and this whole mythology about it. And one of the videos that came up underneath that was the Montauk video by Steve Wilner. She was like, hey, I'll just watch this video. And I watched the video. It was about a 15-minute, 10-minute video. Got through with it. And I've always been, like, had a good memory for movies and stuff. Like, if I hear, even to this day, like, if I see an actor's face that's familiar to me, then I'll have, like, these flashes in my head of scenes that I've seen them in. And I'll be like, oh, I remember that person from this movie. Or if I hear their voices, like, my wife gets mad at me when I'm watching the kids' cartoons because I'm like, oh, that's William Shatner's voice. It's like, how do you know that? Just watch the movie. Yeah. And so, like, when I saw the Steve Wilner's thing, it immediately was familiar to me because my brother and I had commented to each other on, you know, the whole sync web before we would have called it a sync web of Keanu Reeves and everything. So that it's almost weird because my involvement with sync seems like that scene in Mission to Mars, or I think it was Mission to Mars with Gary Sinise, right before he hops in the little water tube and is taken away. He like has these flashes of his whole life, like how he was supposed to be where he is. I feel the same way about Sync. It's like that night I watched that video and I'm like, hey, well, right. I can see what he's doing, but I wasn't completely convinced that it was reality. I went home that night and had this enormously vivid dream about this tree god talking to me and butterflies everywhere, and I woke up the next morning and I was like, what the fuck was that? And I went back and I watched that video, and I knew that the dream had come from that video, and obviously that there was something that I had missed. So before I even got involved in Sync or anything, I watched every video by Steve Wilner, every video by, and then from Steve Wilner, when I was done with that, I was like, well, what do I do now? And his first friend was Seal Lion. So I hit Seal Lion. It was Jake Kotz. I watched every video by Seal Lion. I was like, well, what do I do now? And then I clicked on Jake's blog, and then I read everything in his blog. And then I was like studying, and things were like starting to make sense to me. And then driving down the road one day, I was just like, I cocked my head to the side and was like, well, I'm going to start a blog, and I'm going to call it A Few Shots to Shaman. So I have no idea where the name came from.
None whatsoever. I love how you had all of that behind it, and then you're like, and then it just came to me.
Like, I was... it makes sense. Like, my wife always gets mad at me because if I do drink, if I have a couple of drinks, then all of a sudden I get really philosophical. So in a way, it has multiple meanings. And then afterwards, I realized I found out what ayahuasca was, and I realized that shamans take a couple of shots of ayahuasca. So there's that. And then there's, you know, the point of like, if I have a couple of beers, then I become like some kind of shaman. And I usually write blogs or make movies while I'm drinking. So there are multiple meanings, just like everything that I do, 1.5. But really and truly, it was just like, huh, I think I'll start a blog, and I'll call it A Few Shots to Shaman.
So it's so catchy. It's a very catchy title. So
yeah, well, I meditated upon that name a lot. I just think it's a great name. It's not obvious, but it hints at something obvious, and it really sticks with the reader. It stuck with me. So
awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
You guys are complimentary with the ayahuasca. And
the... Let alone that our names are the same.
Right. Wow.
My middle initial is J as well, so the conspiracy deepens.
Wow. It's like Gemini. That's awesome.
All right. Well, I have to go, guys, or else I'm about to get browbeat by my wife. So much love to both of you guys, and I hope to talk again soon.
Adios.
All right. Peace out.
Bye.
Bye. And then there were two. I don't know how... How long do you want to do this for? Are we going to cut it, or where are you at?
I just wanted to run by just one more idea regarding that middle pillar thing by you. I'm pretty happy with what we've, you know, captured today so far.
Okay.
But this idea of the middle pillar that we were discussing and how... You know, a printed diagram of the Tree of Life is sort of an abomination because it tricks the mind into thinking that the Tree of Life is this static thing, in which you've described in its whirling nature. It's the least bit static. If anything, the printed diagram just allows you to sort of push pause on it and to sort of spend a fleeting moment with something that you can build into a larger, more dynamic Tree of Life. And I've been kind of working with just trying to isolate what the middle pillar or a middle pillar is in relation to these sort of opposing pillars of mercy and severity, and not trying to get too caught up in a very static definition of what mercy is or what severity is, but just to have two pillars that are sort of, I don't know, reflections of each other, or they can be you can sort of discuss them as mercy and severity because you can get that those are two kind of opposing qualities, but it doesn't have to be static like mercy and severity. So this one thing
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So this sort of kind of jumped into my head recently when I started cooking marijuana instead of smoking it.
Uh-huh.
In that when you cook it and you ingest it, you're actually ingesting a different chemical formula. Like, it's a different thing.
Well, it's still tetrahydrocannabinol, right? I mean,
but it's like THC-11. It's a different thing.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
And so it metabolizes through the liver, and so you get a different experience. You can associate it with THC, but it is different. So I kind of was thinking that you can have this this edible component of this plant, and you can have this smoked component of this plant. And they are two separate things in itself. But there's a middle pillar that unites the two, that even though these are separate and different, they're still united by the same source. But there's mm-hmm. there is a commonality that unites them, even though they are different. And that essentially it would, which is weird, you can't get at the psychoactive component of the plant without fire.
Right, which is true for a number of medicines. Yeah.
You need to sort of make that ascension from Malkut to Yesod, which is sort of like the monolith imagery in 2001, that like, what am I trying to say? That before you get to the meat or the body of the tree, there needs to be an ascension or something. That you need right. to accomplish something first. And then when you accomplish that thing, there are two roads that you can go by, but yet, and initially you're going to go either, you're going to cook it or you're going to smoke it.
Well, you know, this brings up a number of things. For one thing, the Hebrew letter shin, which means fire, and fang as well, right? Which is the mastication tooth. So to be able to digest something, you have to be able to chew it up, which is shin, but then it's also fire as well. The Hebrew letter shin represents the three columns themselves. So the three pillars of the tree come together at Yesod, which is visible with the shin. The yuds at the top of each one of those pillars in the Hebrew letter shin are representative of the supernal spherot. And so there's an interesting correspondence there. I've had a whole meditation in terms of correspondence with when it comes to ayahuasca being cooked and digested through, obviously, the digestive tract. But just the fact that the way that the serpent is represented oftentimes as winding up the tree, right? As the, like I said, the thin green line around the Orphic egg, but that this is the seven lower spherot are through material existence. There is this winding thing holding everything in place. And so ayahuasca is one thing that disturbs the fixity of that. So reality is held together through a consensus belief. And so it takes something to break the inertia of that. Tetrahydrocannabinol does it to a certain degree and in a certain way. But substances in general are especially natural substances, well, any substance for that matter, but anything that changes the way the mind and body works, but natural substances are more interesting to me on a certain level just because they feel less like they were produced by Howell or something.
is the substance itself natural when... I don't want to go down that road necessarily.
Right, where's the line, I guess, is...
When you apply fire to it or heat to it or anything to it, so I don't really want to go down the road. But this is the difference between edible and smokable marijuana, is that one can eat at one time and the body can process at one time a more titanic dose than you can by smoking.
Right. They're two different things, but when you bring in the idea of taking something, you know, through the aleph, like Adam is aleph in blood, right? Aleph is the life breath. And so to take something in, and like your capillaries are like the branches of a tree, you know, like you're bringing them into your tree through that means, or whether you're sending them down your serpentine pathways of your digestive tract, which were actually, this was a thing, another thing that Daphne Moore actually goes into from that Jungian manuscript, is the idea of the red dragon, which she equates with Virgo, and has this take of, so when they looked at the, like, from like kind of an alchemical sense of purifying the body, the digestive tract is very important. Like, all kinds of fucking parasites and things will determine our movements in the world. Like, if you feel like you have a craving for cheese, do you actually crave cheese, or is it the fucking parasite, which is basically like a demon that needs to be exercised, right? But she looked at the digestive tract, or not just she, but she writes about it from the way that occultists have looked at the digestive tract as this red dragon that needs to be tamed, or at least like harnessed and directed, so that it's not ruling us, but we're ruling it. Through the will. So like, love is the law, love under will, but applying that to the digestive tract. And so I don't know, I thought that was really like kind of an interesting way to approach it. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It does make sense, because there's an immediacy to the smoke of THC that hits your head immediately, right? It's mm-hmm. almost an instantaneous transformation. But the edible takes longer, and one can forget that one has ingested a substance, and it sneaks up on you later down the road, right?
Like, sure.
And if you've not trusted that you've ingested a substance, you might continue to eat it until it's too late, and all of a sudden, you know that something different is going on. And I don't know if I could ascribe, I don't know where I sit right now with ascribing the difference in those experiences as one is severity and one is mercy, or if it's even appropriate to, but I think that there's something to it. That's just like the headspace that I'm in with that right now. I'm just
right,
kind of working
I would have I would think it more in terms of something's getting absorbed in your stomach, or something's getting absorbed in your chest, isn't as much about the polarities of the right and left as it is as below and above. But I mean, the thing is, like, you want to like, when it comes to ayahuasca, which I imagine is similar to it's similar to mushrooms and similar to digesting marijuana, and that the deeper it goes, the more of an effect it has. Like, and if you throw something up, you know, it's not getting, it's like, it's hard to explain, but the closer it gets to your base, the more of an effect is being produced, because that's, you know, your roots, right? So I don't know, it's an interesting thing to think about. I haven't really thought about substances as much in light of the tree in that way. That's not necessarily hasn't been my focus on relating to the tree as much, but it's interesting to think about.
Well, and in light of the fact that now that this plant is becoming legalized in at least two states of the union, and is sort of on the threshold for becoming a newly acceptable form of recreational intoxication, when people start to look at the dollars that they're spending on a product that is legal, once the math is spelled out and saying that, you know, kind of like how microbrew beer has become more popular because of two components. One is that, you know, the marketable flavor is that it's a better, richer, deeper experience for the palate. But there's also the fact that most microbrew beers are stronger in alcohol content, that one gets sort of a bigger bang for your buck in that sense, right? That if the desired result is to become intoxicated, a potion that has higher alcohol is better than a potion that has lesser alcohol. So with marijuana, when you smoke it, the fire destroys 50% of the THC that is in the plant. But when mm-hmm. you cook it, you're able to extract a higher percentage of the THC. So if this is legal, And, you know, the sort of the homemaker alchemist figures that out, and you start to cook marijuana to extract the totality of the thing that you're interested in. Unwittingly, you're going to have more and more people have these boundary-dissolving transcendent experiences that are only possible through digestion. That a certain pillar is going to open up in America that was only accessible by those who were in the know. Because even though marijuana is illegal, it is a fairly popular intoxicant, but I don't know of many people who take the time to cook marijuana to get at that transcendent experience or even know about that transcendent experience.
Well, that's also what they're like, what they're bringing to their own table and how they're approaching the substance. I mean, that's not like the substance itself necessarily. Like, I mean, it doesn't do anything for you ultimately, other than giving, like, it doesn't dissolve. It dissolves a certain level of a boundary, but it doesn't necessarily push you towards anything, unless if you're already doing that in the first place, like in your life. Like, it doesn't I mean, that's, it's just becomes very plain if you see different people's approaches to the substance. And that's true for all substances, like, as far as I've seen. Like, people, you know, you can't look to the substance it can only do so much for you.
Well, I'm thinking specifically of the speech Grant Morrison gives at the Disinformation Conference. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. But he talks about, he goes, I went to, where is it, Morocco or Kathmandu or something. And he's out on this, you know, on this patio or something. And he says, I'm high on dope. But what he means there is that he's eaten hashish.
Mm-hmm.
And he's eaten like a 2 gram dose of hashish. And he relates being abducted by aliens. And he says, why was I abducted by aliens? He says, because I went to Morocco to get abducted by aliens. But the substance that he chooses to make this thing occur, which normally people would associate with strong psychedelics, he's relating eating hashish, which is simply just digesting THC. And that seemingly is a foreign concept, that to have this breakthrough experience that informs all of his work with the Invisibles was not through LSD, was not through mushrooms, was not through ayahuasca, but that it was accessible through a essentially heroic dose of edible marijuana. And if that substance becomes legal in the United States and people start to have the sort of depth of interest that they have with, that they show with alcohol, that if they just apply that, and with the power of the internet, people are going to start to figure out that you can achieve these incredibly psychedelic transcendent states through this legally accessible plant. All one has to do is take the time to do a little homebrew alchemy, extract the material, put it into a substance, and then eat it. It's essentially going to make the LSD-type experience or the mushroom-type experience completely and utterly legal in America. And I find that to be sort of like the roadblock on the pillar of severity. You know, Ziggy Stardust, he played it left hand. It's going to become the road will now be open.
I found that it was, like, pretty unbearable to eat a large amount of hashish. Like, I was on the floor, kind of like afraid I was gonna die for about 3 or 4 hours.
Absolutely,
like, just nausea like crazy, and just wanting to vomit and not being able to, and just like, it's a very painful experience.
What do they call it? McKenna talks about those kinds of experiences in certain shamanic circles. What do they call them? Ordeal poisons?
Well, there's a value to that kind of thing in that you can kind of you come to the other side of something like that, and it really makes you feel grateful. So, like, I got food poisoning from eating a salmon burrito a couple years back, 2.5 years ago or something like that. And other than, a particular kind of journey, I've only smoked tobacco twice since then. Although the illness wasn't caused by tobacco, it was enough to push my kind of I don't know how to express it. It was it assisted in a breakdown of me to kind of like reflect on my life and my practices.
Absolutely, absolutely.
After like, a number of hours over the toilet, and the purging process was really like, I felt that I wanted to cleanse more. And so that was an initiator for me that I really ended up valuing. And so this is why, like I've mentioned before, that the Hebrew word for atonement, which is escaping me right now, is the same word for purging. So to purge, to vomit, is the same word to atone. And so, I don't know. I thought that was kind of also da'at. Also, as I recall, I look it up again right now, but means to fill up, like on food. So like people say food for thought. So to gain knowledge is also to eat or to become full. And so then, of course, to purge is to atone for that full. So it's like they're all related. And that's all throughout the Hebrew language. There's just tons and tons of examples like that. But I can see the significance of that. Like they eat of the tree, and then you to purge is to release what you've eaten, I've had more radical transformations in my life and purging processes than anywhere else. So
absolutely. So this purging process, this ordeal that, which I think most people will accidentally find themselves into, which will mm-hmm. throw that adrenaline of fear, which will make the experience even more heightened. You find yourself mm-hmm. in the middle of something that you can't stop. You can't close your eyes and go to sleep. You're in the ordeal, right? And it's a physical thing because it's in your entire body. I think the body communicates to the mind that this would be going a lot smoother if A, you didn't smoke cigarettes, B, you weren't an alcoholic, or whatever the thing the body says is like, you keep attacking me. Now I'm going to kind of enlighten you as to this ordeal. This could be going like, you're going to get through this. You're going to be alive, but it's going to be real difficult because you continue to put poisons with your eyes closed. So I kind of say that if marijuana is legal, if edible marijuana is accessible into the home alchemist's workshop, that it's a threat to the tobacco and the alcohol industry because it's an inescapable communication from the body to the mind in that ordeal that you think this is bad. Do you know what you do to me on a daily basis? You eat McDonald's, you smoke cigarettes, you drink too much, which are empty calories, that those thoughts will naturally cross the mind of the person in the ordeal. And when they are grateful, when they're finally let out of that ordeal, it's inevitable that certain decisions will be made, much like your decision to abstain from tobacco, that it is a threat to those industries. It becomes an economical and political stick of dynamite. And
right.
Plenty
of people smoke marijuana to begin with and eat at McDonald's right afterwards. So,
I think that in that, like you said, that stuck on the floor, that nightmare that lasts 3 hours, which is obviously temporarily much longer than 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
You can't forget that. You just don't forget that. I think it's just hardwired into the body. It's kind of like you eat a salmon burrito, you get food poisoning. When's the last time you had a salmon burrito?
I don't know, but I've eaten a lot of salmon.
Okay. I would just say you wouldn't go the next day and say, oh, salmon burrito, bring it on.
Not from the same place. I'll
not from
that.
The same place. I guess this is sort of funneling into the fact that the political issues that are seemingly, for me, the most important political issues are this legalization of marijuana, this idea that healthcare is a universal right, right? Just like freedom and the pursuit of happiness, that they're trying to make healthcare a universal right, and the idea of same-sex marriage. That these three issues are intimately connected, and they're intimately connected for reasons that the public really don't know on a conscious level. And I think there are reasons that we are kind of getting at with a lot of this sync work and a lot of this occult understanding of what the human being is. I don't know. I'm wondering when the other shoe is going to drop and this is going to all become a lot more explicit, which I don't know. I'm kind of working on how I'm trying to bring this all into a coherent, conscious understanding. But this is sort of where all the work now for me is like, the sync work has been entirely personal, entirely personal, entirely esoteric. But now that I'm coming to not the end of that, I'm coming to the transitionary point of how does this all apply to the here and now in America circa 2013? How is this all happening right in this moment? And I can't escape those three issues. I think those are the three most important interlocking issues because it opens up this pillar of experience that was for so long truly a cult, truly sort of taboo, and in the terms of law in America, illegal. You know what I mean? This is the hidden, this is the Velvet Underground, right? This is the... this is the most important thing. This is what the moment of today is all about. And I imagine everyone has a certain portion of those issues as a dominant issue in their life. I think all those three issues affect everybody on some level: healthcare, legalization, and legalization of drugs is sort of a mental health thing. Legalization of same-sex marriage is a sexual health thing. But this is the issue. This is what's happening. And I think the fact that you've kind of eliminated the religious component, we're able to discuss this without the sort of the anchor of morality, which you could throw at any moment and you can kind of you can sabotage the conversation at any moment by throwing a moral anchor into it. You know what I mean? Because you can then justify it by religion, and then you can justify it by faith, and then you have, you know, that sort of amorphous argument. The fact that in America they're trying to tie these three issues into something that is objective is the most important thing of the human narrative. This is happening right now. And I think I'm getting to a clear understanding of it. I just don't know if I have the ability to really communicate it. Whatever, that's my rant for right now. But
no, I hear you. There's a lot of things happening right now. It's like really directly, like people are very concerned about the equality in the same-sex marriage. Yet it's kind of interesting that like some of my friends who are been in gay relationships for many years seem to care less about the same-sex marriage than people who aren't gay that I know. So that's kind of like, they're like, come on, there's bigger issues at play here. And they've been in like, you know, intimate relationships with people for years. And so at least the last time I talked to them, that was how they felt. And so The fact that, you know, Obama just sold out to Monsanto in the biggest way that that's ever happened simultaneously, it's just really something else extraordinary. Like, wow, people's attention is on this issue, which is an important issue. And, you know, the legalization of marijuana is an important issue as well, even if it's just for the reason that, like, you know, like Dr. Thompson pointed out, is that you're basically making like a large, incredibly large percentage of your public into criminals by keeping something illegal that everyone's doing. It's like Lenny Bruce's argument of like, well, someone's doing something, why would you say you can't talk about it? Like, what is there to be ashamed of if everybody's participating in something? You know, not to say that everybody's smoking marijuana, but enough people are that how could, I mean, or don't we live in a democracy? Doesn't majority rule? Like, if the majority of people are wanting something, doesn't that become the standard? Like, I thought that that's actually was an aspect of what democracy was about. And so what does it mean? It means that the people, the less than the majority is making decisions for the majority, which isn't democracy at all. So what the fuck? And they're like, oh, we can vote on something. Then it gets tricky at the same time, you know, because owners don't go out and vote. just kidding. Even if it's, you know, but at the same time, I don't even know if legalization, because of the way that things would get subsidized, and I've talked about this before, I don't know if not, that's not necessarily the answer either. I mean, where I live in California, it's the number one cash crop. And will it stay the number one cash crop for who? It's the number one cash crop for, which is the general public, if it's to be legalized, or will it fall into the hands of the same companies that already exist and take it away from the public? Like, this is a way that people survive, like, in a major way. Like, this is helping people get by, and it's also helping the people that is going, but yet it's illegal. So, like, it becomes a question. There's so many sides to this issue. It's just, it's a lot. But yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think that there's, I don't know.
Yeah. Cause if healthcare is established as a right, that when you're born, especially if you're a citizen of America, your rights include healthcare. You have the right to be healthy. So if marijuana is a medicine that can cure an illness, you have the right to have that medicine. If sexual health is as important to your physical health as food or vitamins, then you have the right to have your sexual health. If that is a homosexual expression, you have the right to that. And then you have the right to have the economic safety of a recognized marriage of two people to have that sort of economic whatever, the enhancement of your economic power, so you can build a home, so you can build a family, so you can build a future, so you can, you know what I mean? Like, if health is right, then you should have all access to the things that make you healthy. You can't have someone saying, you can't have same-sex marriages because it's immoral. Well, then they're saying that your health isn't important. They're infringing upon your right to be healthy. You can't have marijuana in your life because it's immoral. Well, you can't. They're infringing upon your right to be healthy. That whole idea of health as a right is central to all of this entire argument. And I think that, you know, America is this playing field where it seemingly is on the verge of the argument being completely transparent. I think it's, I don't know. Obviously, you look in the media, the way these issues are described, they're not going to be illustrated in this sort of, this soup of occult, sync, esoteric, Kabbalistic terminology. People don't know that language, but yet they understand the issues. I just think that these languages that we use illustrate them in the best possible way. They unite the struggles of 500 years ago with the struggles that we'll have 500 years from now. Like, it makes it sort of a, It just makes the arguments that much more removed from city, church, state, flag, or political party. It just makes it a human, an understanding of what the human being is in relation to the universe, and how criminal and how crazy it is to deny people certain aspects of their universal identity. But, you know, that's all, I guess, maybe a romantic take on it. It's not a very political take on it. But I think that it is. I don't know. It's just the shit firing in my head right now.
Right. Well, I mean, the political takes aren't necessarily meant to get anybody anywhere. They're kind of polar by definition, and so it's hard to ever resolve anything. What you get is, you know, reformation. You're like, it's all about reform. It's not about getting at the heart of an issue. And so it's like, literally, I think politics in many ways is just beating around the bush, so to speak. Can't just insert it. You got to just beat off around it. I think politics, by definition, are a circle jerk, and it's a full metal jack off, literally, literally.
Absolutely.
So, what are you gonna do? But I think maybe this is a good time to wrap this up. I appreciate your thoughts around some of these ideas. It's interesting to think about applying substances to the tree like that. That's something I've only recently delved into. I haven't focused as much on that, but I think that there's something to be said. I keep looking at this image of Michelangelo's rendition of the garden, where the serpent has a human upper body and then its tail wraps around the tree. And every time I look at his tail, it appears to me like ayahuasca root. You know, it looks like this like twining root, or I mean vine, excuse me. It's vine winding up the tree. And it's like, you know, considering that he is the closest thing to the ground, he is the most subtle and cunning of all the creatures in the garden. He's the closest to the earth, that it's as if through the kingdoms there's this kind of intelligence that's winding through from the plant kingdom and kind of like integrating itself into our structure and perceptions. And so the idea of that as Da'at, and then relating certain substances kind of like undo that entanglement of that intelligence and kind of like allow it to recoil long enough to allow one to gain an insight into kind of the wiring under the board, and then relating that to the tree itself as this kind of like dynamic structure that's being positioned in a certain way in order to maintain a certain reality, that yes, the tree itself, if you're to represent it as it's commonly represented, is literally Da'at, but that Da'at is also from where we stand our closest description or intermediary between us and the reality of what the tree actually is. And so once again, it's a case of where the description is not the described, yet the description has its own value just in a relative way. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Awesome. Next week we have tentatively scheduled, I hope it all works out, is Znor. I don't know anything much about this guy, but he writes a blog called Grape Juice. Group name for Grape Juice, definitely on the James Joyce tip. I think he's a great, great writer, and I really look forward to finding out more about this writer. I think it's going to be an evening kind of thing, so I'm going to work to get all the details about next Thursday figured out as early as possible so that we don't have any surprises.
Is he in Japan?
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
So awesome. It should be interesting. Good to hear from you, Dave, as always.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Yeah.
And we'll talk soon.
Okay, man.
All right, later. Peace.